Next case, please. That case will be taken under advisement, of course. 113232, Shulker versus Astru. And it's Mr. Duncan. Hi, Mr. Duncan.
Good morning, Judge. Good morning. Dana Duncan appears on behalf of Virgil Shauger, the appellant in this case. This is a case seeking judicial review of the commissioner's final decision that he was not disabled. His date of last insured was December 31st of 2007.
And Mr. Duncan, I have one maybe side picky question to ask you. This is a case where there was a video hearing with the administrative law judge out in California. Is that correct?
And Mr. Shauger was.
Does the Social Security Administration have a rule about the correct court of appeals? Because we've been around and back and forth with the immigration agency on this issue.
There is nothing. It's just we have been advised that we file in the district of the defendant's case because the applicant's case because the applicant is actually sitting in the area here in Wisconsin. This case was heard in Wausau. The judge and the medical expert appeared from California, but the recording of the transcript was made in Wausau by a hearing monitor. The attorney and the applicant were in Wausau at that time.
No, I understand that. I have the feeling we follow the opposite rule in the immigration cases, but I just wondered if there was any practice that we return to here.
I've never heard of any, but I will tell the court that if that became the rule, we have a right to object to video hearings. That will end all video hearings.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You don't want to go to California?
Well, trying to find an attorney who is admitted out in California.
Well, you can say you don't want to go to California. It's okay.
We don't mind, actually. All right. I mean, I don't want to use up all your time on this.
Sure. The issue in this case is that Mr. Shauger suffered from a left sixth nerve palsy as a result of a fall. His initial treatment was back in 1988. He had treatment again in 89, then in 96, and then shortly before his hearing. The ALJ used the normal boilerplate language used in all credibility assessments, and since briefing this matter, the court has issued the Bjornson decision, which in large part mirrors this. In fact, some of the language I used is very close to the language Judge Posner used in that decision as to exactly the fact that these cases seem to imply that the ALJ first makes the assessment of what the medical limitations are and then decides what the credibility is based upon whether it agrees with his assessment of the evidence.
But of course, even if the ALJ uses this useless boilerplate, if there are other things in the record to indicate that this backwards process hasn't happened, then we forgive them for the unnecessary language. And what I'm curious about is how important is it to nail down when somebody suggested these prism glasses, since it would seem that the prism glasses are being suggested to correct the vision, and it's the vision problems, or at least it's your theory that the vision problems from the left nerve palsy, or the sixth nerve palsy, are creating the headaches. Isn't that your theory of this case?
Correct, Judge. And with these, the boilerplate language, in my brief, I indicated that the biggest issue in resolving this is whether the ALJ applies the Social Security ruling, SSR 96-7P, which deals with credibility. If the judge would follow that directive, then there would be no problem in using the boilerplate language. The problem is they don't follow it very often, and when they do, they apply it in a very superficial manner. In this particular case, even if he were to have had those glasses, the judge has to make findings under SSR 97-7P that, one, that the glasses would have corrected the problem, two, that there was treatment that would improve his condition, and three, that he could have afforded the treatment. If any three of those do not occur, then that factor can't even be considered on the issue of credibility. And that's the problem in this particular case. The judge, the ALJ in this particular case, made three findings, two of which were without any application. it would have been real easy for the ALJ to simply, while the applicant is sitting and before him, said, okay, did you have health insurance? Did your wife have health insurance? Could you have afforded this? Did the doctors ever do any further assessment to determine whether these glasses would have cured or resolved the condition? None of these questions were asked. I guess that's what the whole purpose of these hearings sometimes is. As an attorney who regularly appears and handles probably about 200 administrative hearings himself, you cannot anticipate where the judge is going. So even if you're the attorney and you want to develop the record, you can't assume that the judge is going to find certain things, because otherwise your hearings would be 2.5 to 3 hours long. You have to go by what it is and help and follow along with the direction that the ALJ is leveling or presenting, the direction that they seem to be going and how they're thinking about the case. In this particular case, there is nothing.
Granting that, there was also some discussion at the hearing, was there not, about his possible use of a patch and whether jobs existed for a person with monocular vision.
Correct.
And so I wasn't sure how long, whether the record shows how long he tried the patch. I mean, eventually you would think the brain would adjust to that. He says it's unsuccessful. He says, I'm still kind of trying to look underneath the patch. But how long did he try it?
I'm not exactly sure, and I don't think the record is exactly sure. The problem there again is that since this was a Step 5 decision, it's the burden of proof resting on the commissioner to establish that he can do these other jobs.
So did the remind me, I should know this, but did the vocational expert's hypothetical include a specification of monocular vision?
The ALJ, let me just double check here, the hypothetical followed the judge's RFC, or residual functional capacity assessment, which was full range of work at all exertional levels, no heights, no moving machinery, open pools of water, no jobs requiring depth perception, and no confined workspaces.
Okay, so I suppose the depth perception might indirectly get at it, but maybe not.
Yeah, it's the depth perception and the field of vision and all that, these are specifics. The work or Social Security deals with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles and its companion publication, The Selective Characteristics of Occupations. The Selective Characteristics of Occupations specifically reviews jobs and says these jobs have field of visions issues, these jobs have depth perception issues, these jobs involve other things. So when you're going through and the vocational expert's testifying, those are factors that have to come into play on these particular circumstances.
I have a really odd question for you, but after he files his disability claim, several doctors examine him. One is an internist. One is an ophthalmologist. Is it really true that the third was an OBGYN?
Yes.
I wondered about that.
It requires clear vision, you understand.
Because
the state of Wisconsin and all states have these doctors who are hired through the Disability Determination Bureau. There's no rhyme or reason. They put a code in the regulations. I regularly look at them. It's not uncommon to have an oncologist reviewing a back injury, to have an OB doing ophthalmology.
Well, I can think of a lot of hilarious things to say, but I won't.
All right. If there is no more questions, I think my time is just about up, and I would like to reserve some. But
Why don't you reserve for rebuttal?
No, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that I'm concerned about in this particular case also is the failure of the ALJ to look or explore the headaches issue, because the claimant testified specifically about headaches, that they occurred after about 15 minutes of having to look. The doctor at the hearing, Dr. Nafusi, who's now been decertified by Social Security, testified to the fact that the headaches did occur with this condition, but yet the ALJ made no finding whatsoever or any consideration of the number, length, or severity. if these are severe and numerous, then it clearly would be a limiting factor because he would not be able to readily perform on a consistent basis 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. There would be unscheduled breaks which would come into play. Ultimately, Your Honors, what the ALJ is saying in this case is I've looked at this and I've looked at what the evidence is, and I've determined what the limitations are, and now I'm going to tell you you're credible only to the extent that you agree with what I assess the limitations to be, which is backwards, but that's the way it's been done. That's the way the computer program is set up that Social Security uses to write the decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Come on up, Mr. Imani. Hi.
So, Mr. Imani, can you confirm that there's no regulation about where appeals go when we have two different circuits involved?
Your Honor, I believe plaintiff's counsel is correct in stating that generally the practice in Social Security is that where the claimant resides is where those cases are filed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your Honor.
What about this issue of the prism glasses, if you could go right to that? Because, of course, the ALJ found him not credible because he said there was nothing more he could do. But yet one doctor had suggested, prism glasses might help, and Schauger claims that the doctor's suggestion came after his testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So isn't this a problem with the ALJ's credibility determination on that factor?
No, Your Honor, because the evidence suggests that he was also recommended these prism glasses in 2007. Now, while the ALJ doesn't note that specifically in his decision or her decision, it is part of the record.
But that's
the
problem.
Yeah, but you can't look at things that, didn't occur and bolster the ALJ with that sort of stuff.
No, Your Honor.
Well, that's the Chenery point. And the thing in the record from the earlier possible recommendation, well, there are two things. It's very difficult to read, but the ALJ's opinion, I'm looking at it at page 5, is quite clear that it's the 2009 treatment note
right. That
the ALJ is relying on. There is no ambiguity, whatever. It's not as though the ALJ says doctors have recommended prism glasses, where you might say, well, maybe the ALJ was thinking of both. It's only the one that's too late.
That's correct, Your Honor. The ALJ does only discuss the 2009 prescription for prism glasses. The point I think I was trying to make was the fact that there was a recommendation in 2007 and then again in 2009 suggests that Mr. Schauger never obtained these prism glasses.
But aren't you rewriting the ALJ's opinion?
No, Your Honor.
You should have been the ALJ, but you weren't.
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe it's consistent with his opinion in that Mr. Schauger never sought treatment for his or did not see consistent treatment for his underlying eye condition.
But what about the other points that Mr. Duncan raises? We don't penalize people for being too poor to go to doctors or not having the kind of resources to buy very fancy glasses. These are probably quite expensive glasses. The record is entirely silent on all of that.
That's probably correct, Your Honor, but I believe Mr. Duncan overstates the extent to which the
ALJ... No. The ALJ absolutely failed to question him about any perceived gaps in treatment.
Correct. The ALJ did not ask, but Mr. Duncan asked at the test during the hearing why he didn't seek treatment. And the reason that Mr. Schauger provided wasn't that he had any financial barriers or financial obstruction. It was because he stated that he believed that there was nothing more that doctors could do for the condition. And that's belied by the fact that he never sought treatment for headaches in the first place.
Well, he's got this thing that truly waxes and wanes. And, he had remained pretty stable for about 8 years, but now was suffering from this sixth nerve palsy that was precipitating these very, very terrible headaches. And You know, he went through all these batteries of tests. No one could determine a cause.
Mr. Shager initially experienced these symptoms after his initial fall in the late 80s, and there is some treatment history in the late 80s, and he alleged that the headaches occurred because he had to turn his head slightly to the left because as a result of his double vision.
Well, sure, headaches are going to occur if people, I mean, in common sense, people are straining their eyes. But what I'm concerned is that your theory seems to be that if somebody seeks treatment and reaches an end, then he's supposed to second-guess the doctors who have said there's nothing else to do in case some other doctor 5 years later comes along and says, well, actually, I can think of something you can do. Maybe you can have prism glasses. And I don't know that that's a fair burden to put on lay people, constantly to be questioning the medical advice they've received so far.
Correct, Your Honor, and the commissioner doesn't disagree with that point. It's that throughout his treatment history, that he was, to some extent, prescribed these prism glasses, or at least...
He wasn't,
But the ALJ never mentions the 2007 prescription. You can't bolster the ruling with evidence that an ALJ has not relied on.
Your Honor...
That's the uphill struggle you're facing.
Yes, Your Honor. But the ALJ did rely on the testimony of the medical expert, Dr. Nafusi, who did review the record and also had treated people or individuals with similar conditions in the past and noted that while Mr. Shager's condition could produce headaches, that they were not be severe headaches and that they would not place any further limitations on his ability to complete work.
But not Dr. Nafusi is not an examining expert. Isn't he just a reviewing expert? How does he know how severe the headaches are? And did the commissioner go through the required drill from SSR 96-4P to evaluate this evidence?
The medical expert's testimony was based on his past treatment of individuals with similar conditions.
Right. So I mean, how would you know if you read a record that said person X has migraines? Would you be able from those words on a page to know that they were the kind of migraines that you had to stay home and be in bed for, whether the kind of migraines that you could take some medication and still come to work for, or they were the kind of migraines that were going to have you throwing up in the bathroom? I mean, how would you know from those words?
Your Honor, it's based again on the...
They vary by the patient, actually.
Exactly, Your Honor.
So that's why Dr. Nafusi, not having any encounter with Mr. Shager, wouldn't really know how severe the headaches were.
Correct, Your Honor, but Mr. Shager isn't complaining of run-of-the-mill headaches. He's saying that these headaches are so severe that they require 2 to 3 45-minute breaks per day, and that's just not supported by any record in the evidence.
But that's the kind of evidence, that's the kind of report of pain that we've been through many times in these Social Security cases where the person is experiencing pain, and we do have some underlying medical condition that could yield pain. And at this point, it's a question of degree and what evidence is pertinent to assess degree.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did the ALJ rely on any of it?
The ALJ didn't say that Mr. Shager wasn't experiencing headaches or come out and disregard anything that Mr. Shager said. In fact, throughout the opinion, her record demonstrates where she credited Mr. Shager's complaints, but with respect to the headaches, noted that he didn't prescribe any prescription medication for those headaches, didn't seek treatment for those headaches, and it was consistent, again, with Dr. Nafusi's opinion that
these... Well, you know, this Dr. Nafusi, by the way, I wouldn't want to hang my hat on a guy like his testimony. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of his history.
I was not, Your Honor. I don't believe that this was before the ALJ or that he was decertified at the time that he testified before the ALJ. The inclusion of boilerplate in this case in and of itself doesn't warrant a remand. As this court has noted, it's whether they also give sufficient reasoning to support this. Here,
have you asked them, though, to get rid of this boilerplate? Because the backwards reasoning problem that we've identified is very serious.
ALJ, Your Honor, the the decision or the presentation of this is not a model of perfection, or no, we're not claiming that it's the model of clarity.
But however, I think you need to give them some feedback to say, you know, we can't force you to do it, but the fact is the courts are not going to uphold these kinds of determinations.
We might suggest it in one of our grand opinions.
Yes, Your Honor.
We already have.
Oh, we have.
Might get their attention if we do it loud enough.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think you ought to bring these people in with you so they can see how tortured you are by this.
I will, Your Honor. Your Honor, I see that my time is about to expire.
And your heart, so sit down. Okay, thank you so much. Okay. Oh, you used your time up. I'm going to give you 1 minute.
If you think you need it.
I don't believe I do. I guess I would just ask the court if there's any questions, and I'll leave it at that.
Good.
Thank you.
I'll see you around.
Thank you.
Under advisement. Thanks, everyone. 11-2.